Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Tonight is April the 17th in the year 2013 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm here with my co-host, Kirsten Milliken. Due to scheduling reasons, this show was pre-taped, so we're going to get through some announcements and then kind of run the show in its entirety. We're very excited about the show. Mark Burton is kind of a great find. I think that you're going to find that this show is very, very insightful. As a reminder, Attention Talk Video and Attention Talk News are part of the Attention Talk Network along with Attention Talk Radio. Each one of them are a different format. Certainly the radio is an audio format. Attention Talk Video is a video talk show, and Attention Talk News is a subscription-based news service. You can learn more about those channels by going to attentiontalkvideo.com or attentiontalknews.com. As a reminder out there, everybody, it's not too late to sign up for the regional CHAD conference that's going to be held May the 4th. That's right, coming right around in the year 2013. It's going to be in Dallas at the Sheraton Dallas Hotel. For more information on that, go to chadd.org. Let's see, anything else? As a reminder, you can learn more about us and keep up to date news by following us on Facebook. That's at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio. There we post shows from Attention Talk Radio, Attention Talk Video, and we'll post articles and stuff from Attention Talk News. So with that, let's get on to the show. Again, with us tonight in our virtual studio is Mark Burton. The topic is the impact of media on ADHD. So let's roll the tape. With us tonight in our virtual studio is Dr. Mark Burton, a board-certified developmental behavioral pediatrician. He studied at the UCLA School of Medicine and completed his training in general pediatrics at Oakland Children's Hospital in California. He received fellowship training in neurodevelopmental behavioral pediatrics at the Children's Evaluation and Rehabilitation Center at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. He is an assistant professor of pediatrics at New York Medical College. He's a consultant for child development and literacy and serves on the editorial advisory board for Common Sense Media. He's a frequent lecturer for parents, teachers, and professionals on topics related to child development, autistic spectrum disorders, and ADHD. His book, The Family ADHD Solution, was released in 2011. He's a contributing writer for Huffington Post, Psychology Today, Friends of Quinn, and Education Update. More information is available at his website at developmentaldoctor.com. That's developmentaldoctor.com. And you can find him on Facebook at The Family ADHD Solution. So with that, Dr. Burton, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
Very excited about today's show for a variety of reasons. One is at last year's CHAD conference in San Francisco, you were here talking about this particular topic today, which is the impact of media on ADHD, and I wasn't able to attend. So I'm anxious to kind of catch up on things. And to start things out, let's just talk for a second, just understand, when people say the word media, what is that? And once we understand that, we'll kind of get into some more details.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think when we use the word media in terms of child development research, it's actually something that's obviously rapidly changing because the technology is changing so much. But pretty much we're just talking about almost anything that has a screen. So you're talking about computer time, video games, TV, movies, and what the impact of all those types of activities potentially could be on child development as a whole. And certainly in terms of the talk I gave last fall and for what we might talk about today, there's both general research having to do with, children, the general population of children, as well as a few things that are more specific to ADHD I want to touch on as well.
So in general, you're saying just a generic place of starting is media is really anything that deals with the screen. So a TV, computer, iPad, touch, all that stuff, all that encompasses. Even some of these like little learning games that I see kids on now, like Leapster and stuff like that, all that fundamentally would be considered media?
That's exactly right, yes.
So let me ask you then, because we're being bombarded with it. I mean, it's literally everywhere. even in my house, I kind of look around, you know, the stereo players being taken out, monitors are being put in, iPads are around. I actually was at a restaurant the other day, and you could order the menu right off of an iPad and went right back to the kitchen. So just in a general sense, tell us about media, its impact on our world, and can you tell us a little bit about the research and what impact we think it's having?
Well, I think this is, I mean, it's really a huge topic, and what often happens, I think, is that the general discussion often seems to be that it's kind of inevitable change, which I think is true. I mean, one thing I want to say, and even, you know, outlining this talk is, you know, I have my smartphone, and I don't think technology is going anywhere, so it's not so much that I think, or anyone should think, that screen time is inherently bad in any way. At the same time, there really is a consensus within the field of pediatrics that screen time influences child development. To sort of start where I'd like to end in some way, that it's really important that we teach children how to manage it well because of that influence. So, you know, in spite of a lot of discussion that makes it sound like this is very open-ended, there's a fairly large body of research that says that for various reasons, you know, this does impact kids. So some of it has to do with the marketing side of media, which is that kids are particularly vulnerable to marketing. Marketing has become very, very skillful in influencing behavior. And really on a practical level, those sorts of habits, you know, the habits that develop around, you know, products we use and toys we're going to seek out and all those sorts of things, on a neurologic level, really, really hardwire themselves on, so that if you can, you know, what the people doing that type of marketing are aware of is that if you can create those sort of behavioral habits young, they often simply persist. The other side of what the research suggests is that there are a lot of behavioral influences across childhood. And, you know, again, I actually wrote about this recently. There was an interesting thing that happened about a week or two ago where, on the one hand, there was a series of articles published sort of talking about violence in the media, and the consensus kind of seemed to be that, you know, that we don't really know the impact of violence in the media. Pretty much the same day, the American Academy of Pediatrics put out a statement really summarizing once again that we do know that children who are exposed to too much screen time, especially inappropriate screen content, are at risk for all sorts of things. So it, you know, influences food choices, and it correlates with problems in school and problems with health. And there's a lot of, you know, it's a very difficult body of research to conduct smoothly, because it's very, you know, people try to control for whether, you know, kids who are already at risk for these sorts of behaviors are the ones who are more prone to more screen time or vice versa. But really, as much as anyone digs and tries to refine the research, it always points the same direction. So in early childhood, there have been studies showing that background television decreases the length of social interactions between parents and kids, decreases the amount of talking from adults to kids, and we know that early language development is one of the most important, or cultivating early language skills is one of the most important things we can do for children, and screen time may disrupt that. There's other studies looking at that play. You know, imaginative play is a very important child development, and screen time may change the type of play children do. And there's even been a couple of studies that came out just in the last few months showing that doing little more than modifying the content of preschool television and movie time can help children's behavior. So there was one study that showed that doing nothing more than making a preschooler screen time more appropriate improved their sleep habits, and a second one, changing the content of preschoolers' TV changed their behavior. So, you know, that's early childhood. And then in teens, again, you know, we can always use more research, but on a practical level, there have been many, many studies showing that exposure to, you know, any of the things that we in general are trying to counsel teens to do less of, you know, drinking and smoking and early sexuality, is probably influenced by screen time as well. So really across the lifespan, again, it's not about none, but there's certainly, it's not about, you know, kids shouldn't have any screen time. But helping them learn to use it wisely, learn to use it well, is really an important part of modern parenting, I think.
There's a lot in here, Dr. Burke, and if I may, I'd like to kind of make a few just comments on a few different areas and kind of transition this to ADD for a second.
Sure.
Attention Talk Radio, we like to pay attention to what people are paying attention to, which is not necessarily so obvious. And to me, when I say that, that's a simple statement. But when people are watching the media, they're paying attention to that and influence it. And one of the things that we've learned from some of the experts that we've had on is that if you consistently pay attention to things differently, my understanding is the concept of neuroplasticity comes in, and it physically can change the brain. And I'm interested in your thoughts after that. We also did a show a year ago with Dr. Russell Barkley on his executive function deficit disorder construct, and some things that really, really resonated for me was one, ADD, as he described, is not an attention issue, it's a self-regulation issue. And certainly, as you watch kids sometimes play a lot of computer games, I mean, they as a parent, so they might not be able to pay attention to school, but they always pay attention to this computer game, which would explain it. But if it's a self-regulation issue, their issue is not paying attention to the computer game, it's actually pushing themselves away. And then one other concept that you had mentioned that just stuck in my head, and Kirsten is real, I want to ask you about this in a second, Kirsten, is the notion of play. One of the things that we had talked about, Dr. Barkley, in his interview last year, was the notion that when children are small, play is external, and as you grow old, it becomes privatized, and you manipulate it in your head, and it's no longer out there. And I know a lot of times with adults that I'm working with, ADD, we try to externalize that playing process to get it out. And this notion of interacting with the screen, to me, makes it a little bit more difficult to externalize that, which, where I'm going with all this, it seems to me that that the stuff that you've described in the research, when we start talking about those with ADHD who are attracted to things that are stimulating and have a self-regulation issue, we really have more of a problem here. So can you speak to those? Would you agree with some of those comments, disagree with those comments, and how does that play in from your perspective?
I think those are all great comments and touch on several ideas I think are very, very important in, again, I'll transition to ADHD, but certainly in general child development, but very specific to ADHD. So first, neuroplasticity is really how we understand the brain to work at this point, which is to say that anything we do repetitively rewires the brain. And there is some sort of growing research suggesting that one of the ways we can take advantage of that is training attention and executive function. And the flip side of that is that when it comes to screen time, there's a small but growing suggestion that excess screen time may relate to a worse attention span. And one study that got a lot of play, about a year ago, I think, was a study in which they looked at a popular cartoon versus a PBS show versus, I think it was an art activity. And they had preschoolers who did this activity for only 9 minutes. So, I think for any of us who have kids and who know kids, there are very few kids who are just doing 9 minutes of any particular cartoon. And after 9 minutes, they were able to show that the kids who watched the cartoon had decreased executive function on the measures they were using versus no change on the PBS show and no change in the crafts activity. So, because of the concept of neuroplasticity, I think it's at least a concern. You have to wonder what the impact would be of expanding that amount of time over the course of the day. When it comes to ADHD in particular, I completely agree with Dr. Barkley that the attention issues that occur in ADHD are just part of a much more larger umbrella of executive function deficits or really another way of looking at it are delays in self-regulation. And when I talk to people about the attention part of ADHD, it's really not about a short or long attention span. It's about attention management issues. And that means for a lot of people with ADHD, it's a hard time paying attention when things get cognitively challenging. And then it's just as very often they seem to get almost sucked into and over-grabbed by things that are really engaging. So when you look at ADHD more as a sort of self-regulation, when it comes to media specifically, what you basically have is a product that is really designed to have, it's designed to grab you. I mean, that's the fun of it. That's why a lot of us like our entertainment, whatever it is we're choosing, movies or video games or anything else, because it's engaging and it doesn't have a clean endpoint, and you know, and their goal is to really keep you there. And if you have ADHD and you don't transition your attention particularly easy, and you don't keep track of time particularly well, and you're not sort of self-monitoring as skillfully as you might otherwise, you can just get sucked in for hours and hours without even realizing time has passed. And I think that that happens with ADHD over and over again. So while some other child who has more typical executive function skills, more typical ability to sort of manage their attention and manage their really manage their life, because, you know, again, I want to get past looking at ADHD as an attention disorder because it's so much more than that. You know, where all these things we're being bombarded with may be manageable by someone who has more typical executive function. When you have ADHD, when you have an executive function deficit disorder, it's really hard. It becomes much more disruptive and intrusive and much more of an influence on day-to-day life.
I've got a few comments and questions, but before, we're going to have to go to a break in a minute, but I just real briefly, Kirsten, you want to comment or have any questions on what we've covered so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you're referring to Dr. Barkley, and if you've attended, I know you've attended some of his presentations, but one of the recent ones that I attended was him explaining why executive functions are important. And, you know, one of the things that they do is they help us regulate how we interact in our community, in our relationships, and as we operate out in the world. And I think certainly when you're talking about watching a passive television show, there's not a whole lot of executive function involved in that. But I think that there's a differentiation. There should be a differentiation between some of the passive media activities that kids and adults can engage in, and then maybe some of the more active activities, certain video games, you know, some of the online stuff that happens, where they do require some executive function skills. And there's research right now that's happening talking about, you know, when you're paying attention to the skills that you're supposed to be using in these games, that there can actually be a positive impact on executive skills. Dr. Barton, I don't know what you've seen.
That would be like online learning and stuff like that, right?
Well, I think, I think you're right. I mean, in the end, you know, technology is just a tool. It isn't, you know, it just depends on how we use it and what sort of things we choose to do. And you know, the recent American Academy of Pediatrics statement, which summarized a lot of the research, basically says something that I agree with, which is a lot of it has to do with, you know, choosing how we're going to use it and choosing the content that we do. On the other hand, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge too that, you know, there isn't a lot of research suggesting that that there are benefits. There's various studies suggesting there are benefits, and I think in the long run there'll be more and more of them as we get, you know, as we are better able to pin down, you know, how to best use technology to benefit us. But certainly, you know, certainly I agree in the bigger picture of, yeah, I mean, if you pick educational activities and pick activities that are more, you know, drawing on executive function and or cognitively demanding in different ways, you know, that's where the benefits of all this is going to lie. Plus, you know, I think another interesting overlap between the benefits of technology and computers and everything else in ADHD is the potential to use, you know, for, again, I think Dr. Barkley comes up again, but, you know, the concept of externalizing the system, I mean, you can certainly, you know, use computers as a way to help support overall organization, but if you have self-regulatory skills that are challenged, you know, you also have to just be cautious and make sure it doesn't become more distracting and more more disruptive over time. So there is some, you know, so there definitely is the potential for gain, and there are various studies suggesting, like you said, like potentially it could improve executive function in some ways, and it certainly can be an educational tool, but that isn't the way I think it's used in general at this point in time.
I need to go to a break, but before we go real quick, earlier in our conversation you had spoken this, you know, it's an attention management issue in dealing with the media stuff here, and I want to kind of pull in your book, The Family ADHD Solution. That book is really about evidence-based ADHD care and with some mindfulness. Is that an accurate reflection of what that book was?
It's basically, I don't know if people know what mindfulness is or have time to define it, but the short of it is, yes. I mean, the book is a look at the overall picture of ADHD care that hopefully acknowledges how stressful and difficult it can be to do all the things that we're asked to do, looking at, you know, educational interventions, behavioral interventions, medical interventions, and it's lots of stuff to handle for parents, and what I hope mindfulness offers them are some tools to help manage the stress and sort of day-to-day up and downs of living with ADHD.
Well, I know that in my world as a coach, one of the things we spend a lot of time on is helping people learn how to pause, kind of catch themselves, to notice kind of what they're doing as opposed to just kind of running with it and kind of going doing it. And the idea there is once you notice what you're doing, you're paused and you're mindful of what you're doing, that kind of creates choice.
Right.
And many times people's behavior changes as a result of really kind of making those choices. And what I'm hearing, this book sounds like exciting, I have to go get it myself, that you're integrating that, hey, you know, even because we're talking about media here, we're talking about self-regulation issues, one of the things this notion is notice yourself and say, hey, I need to pull away from the screen time. I need to get away from instant messaging of the text because that's certainly a self-regulation issue. So we need to run to a break real quick. Where's my button here? We'll run to a break. We'll be right back.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back to everybody. This edition of Attention Talk Radio, we're having a great conversation on ADHD and media with Dr. Burton. Dr. Burton, before the break, we were talking about what media was, talking about really the need to manage your attention around it. We're bringing concepts of some of the things about ADHD in and why it might be a little bit more difficult. From what I'm hearing from you is there's definitely the research is suggesting it's having an impact, and it's touching many, many different areas of our lives, whether it's sleep, social interaction, play, nutrition, among others. Can you just kind of expand on that concept a little bit so we can kind of bring everything in? Because it really has a pretty big footprint in terms of its impact in our world, right?
Well, you know, I think actually it's, you know, I think this really to me follows from what you were talking about, right, you know, during the lead into the break, in that, you know, so much and mindfulness in general, in that so much of what we do in life is very habitual, and it's very easy to fall into kind of autopilot around almost any decision. And I really think in many ways that's what's happening around media. It's certainly, you know, screen time in general is just ubiquitous. It's everywhere, and it seems like there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. And to some degree, that's true. I mean, it's here to stay, and that's fine. I mean, I think it's just important that we see it as a tool that we, you know, that we use instead of get used by. And so to answer your question, I think that often we're underestimating the impact it has, particularly on young children, so that when you look at child development as a whole, I'm not even sure attention is, attention probably isn't the most proven influence of media. I think there's a growing number of studies that suggest that screen time affects attention and executive function for the worse. But bigger than that, you have studies suggesting that, media often correlates with behavioral problems and academic problems and poor eating habits and obesity and issues with sleep. And doesn't need to be. I think Kristen sort of pointed out that, there are benefits to it as well, as long as we use it wisely. And I think while we need more specific research to, to look at if it has, how amplified this is in people who have ADHD, again, because of that, issue with self-regulation as a whole, one of the things you have to just, look at least notice and pay attention to, I think, looking at the research, is that when you look at that risk, that list of things media puts kids at risk for, in many ways it very closely parallels the risk of things that ADHD puts you at risk for. So certainly I think one concern is just, and I think we need to look into it more, is how do those things overlap? So, both put kids at risk for academic issues and both put kids at risk for behavioral issues and, eating issues. And so, how do we, look at it more proactively, because, it isn't all negative. It's just, how do we teach kids then, by pausing and paying attention to what's going on in our household or our community, how do we, with more intention, set out a way of living with media for our kids that's healthy for them?
That's a great point. And I say that's a great point, and I want to pause here for a second, because as we've been talking, I've been thinking in my own life, how do you do it? How do you change? How do you create the environment so you don't get sucked into the screen time? I just had a flashback to when I was a kid. I remember wanting so badly to have a TV in my room. And my father was adamantly against it, where all my friends did, and I was like, why? And his sole reason is because if the TV was in your room, that's where you'd spend all your time. Mm-hmm. And he wanted everybody he wasn't a real fan of TV, but if we were going to watch it, he wanted us all in the same room together to watch it, as opposed to being off in some other places. And forgive me, I'm just having an insight myself. It's funny because in my house, my kids got laptops and stuff, and I converted our dining room into a media room. Really, I cut a hole in the middle of the dining room table so everybody could put their cord. So they're always going to be on their laptop. At least we're in the same room together,
mm-hmm.
so that there's some socialization going on, as opposed to being at different parts of the house. So, I'll tell you, even in that concept that I thought it was a good idea, it's still so hard to do. From your perspective, what are some key things that, parents can do or people should be doing? I mean, there's certainly the mindfulness of it, but how do you create that environment to share that time and pull away from it?
Well, I think there's a few different things to look at. And certainly one of the things, which I think you just alluded to as well, is just, what are we modeling as parents? If we're going to try to, live in this new world in a way that makes sense, we have to make choices for ourselves that demonstrate how we want to do it. So if it means, putting all our phones to the side when it's dinner time, I hope most families are doing that. It's family time, not screen time. And I think part of, even before, I certainly want to talk in a moment about, how to specifically manage media, but I think even before you look at specifically how to manage media, one of the concepts I sometimes talk about with media and screen time is just like calendar backwards. I mean, look at what it is you want to prioritize in your household and then sort of lay it out and see if you were to look at it that way, what's left for that sort of, the sort of junk food for the brain. So you want to look at things like prioritizing homework, prioritizing exercise, prioritizing family meals, prioritizing free play in young children, providing social interactions with other kids, and again, some of this is really allowing society to change. So, social interactions are becoming sometimes, around video games. And, again, you can't, I think I always, you know, even in talking about this, I think there's a danger of falling into like the, you know, the like you can imagine 50, 60 years ago, all the people, you know, saying rock and roll is evil. I mean, you know, it's not bad at all. You know, this isn't something that's, you know, that needs to go away or anything else. But I do think, you know, at the same time, we just have to acknowledge the reality of it, that it can have an influence. So it's sort of looking at that bigger picture of what it is we want to promote, and then also allowing the changes to happen that are naturally happening. So I think that's part of it. Part of it is just looking at that bigger picture and not letting media and screen time intrude on whatever it is we want to value in our families. And for some families that can mean different things. I mean, a lot of families I know have gotten to the point recently where they're choosing to have almost none Monday through Thursday, like that when you start teasing out after-school activities and homework and, you know, wanting to spend some time as a family, there really isn't a whole lot of time for anything else. You know, other families have other ways of managing it, of setting time limits or other things.
This is so simple. We've really been talking about a few fundamentals here, but the notion of ADHD being a self-regulation issue and looking at the media, and it's really all about regulating, because what you're saying is it's here to stay. There's some things. The focus is really on regulating it more than anything. And part of that, of reading into what you're saying, is really a lot about the environment. I know when I'm coaching adults, as I explained, it's not so much about the topic. Your job is your job, but your ability to perform has typically more to do with the environment that's around you than necessarily the topic. I mean, I've coached that were, you know, they did computer programming, they loved it, and then all of a sudden they didn't like it. And the difference was when they were going to school, there was people around there interacting, and then they found themselves in a cubicle all by themselves for hours and hours a day. And they still can do it, but the issue was that environment was really difficult for them. So just at the heart of this, it seems more and more the challenge is really got a self-regulation issue in a situation that you got to deal with it. And it's a lot about adjusting the environment so as not to tempt yourself.
I think that's part of what I'm saying, but I think there's a little more to it that also ties together directly with ADHD management as a whole. I mean, so much of managing this bigger picture of executive function is both setting up an environment, but also setting up routines, and then for younger kids, you know, teaching through limit setting, a lot of skills that just set up habits that help you manage ADHD. So in early childhood, you know, a lot of helping kids with any degree of, you know, helping kids with sleep issues is, you know, you create a healthy routine until it becomes a habit over time, and hopefully that addresses it. You know, another analogy I sometimes use with the general picture of media nowadays, not necessarily some of the beneficial studies Kristen referred to earlier, but in general, a lot of it's kind of like junk food. I mean, you know, for many kids, if you just put donuts on the table for three meals a day, they just eat donuts. But, you know, but we all know that that's not a healthy way to raise kids. So we put out healthy foods and we let them have some junk when it's time for that.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of screen time, I think there's two things to look at. One is that general picture of promoting, you know, a healthy lifestyle. But the other piece of it, I think, is again that overlap of self-regulation and media, which is that, you know, if you think of a lot of teenagers nowadays, for example, do their homework on their, you know, on a computer with about six different things going on the screen, and it's one of those things where, you know, if you don't have ADHD, you know, I think probably isn't ideal. You know, there's probably not the most efficient way to get work done, but if you have strong executive function skills, you know, maybe you've learned to juggle all that and you're doing okay. I think one of the risks is that if you don't have strong executive function skills, then you're sort of pulled into that same social world where that's what's going on, but it isn't best for you. You know, you're not able to handle all those different pulls. And there are an increasing number of teens that I've discovered on their own programs that sort of, you know, shut off everything that's extraneous during the time they're actually supposed to be working, because they find, you know, that they can't juggle all those different things, that once they're pulled off to something else, they stay there where somebody else with better, you know, with a stronger self-management skills would be able to, you know, get pulled for a second and then come back quicker.
Hmm. Kirsten, do you have a question?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, we used to have cable television at my house, And 2 years ago, I decided we were done with it. I don't watch television, and my kids certainly didn't need to. And so we have Apple TV, and they watch a very limited amount of television now. And it dawned on me after about 6 months of them not watching commercials on television at my house that I could go to the store without them going, oh, I want it. Can we go look at this? Can we get that? Can we get this? Because they weren't getting all of that advertisement and all the flashy stuff that was happening in all the, you know, network television shows. It changed their consumerism, their yep. need to have more stuff, to the point that when their birthdays come, it's like pulling teeth to even get them to tell me if there's something they want, because they're not getting exposed to all of this stuff anymore. So, you know, as far as the impulsivity and, you know, spending, I love thing, but it changed my shopping habits too, because I'm not seeing all of it.
Right.
So I think it's not just the television shows, but yeah, any of the media out there is having an effect. So even thinking about the kind of media, you know, what venue do we use to let our kids see this stuff? Is it on computer?
Right.
Is it on television, on cable, or is it on something else?
And I think that's a wonderful point. And certainly, you know, when I go through my, you know, sort of bullet points on how to skillfully manage media, that's one of them. I mean, marketing, you know, has a profound influence on children, and studies have been done within what you're alluding to, all the way down to toddlers, where if toddlers watch a movie with commercials and then you put them in a big playroom where, you know, some of the food in this pretend supermarket is non-branded and some of it's branded, they'll go for the branded stuff that they've seen in the commercials, you know, all the way down to that age. So so one of the I totally agree that one of the ways we can help our kids out is by, you know, as much as possible, avoiding media, using digital recorder, avoiding marketing, and then when it's not possible to avoid marketing, talking to them about it so that they're aware of, you know, what the purpose of it is, that, you know, and there was a big article in the New York Times recently about one of the major major store chains and how they use this sort of marketing research to influence behavioral habits. And I thought one of the most interesting lines in the whole very long piece was one of their scientists pointing out that one of the most important ways to help people break habits is just to point out that they're there, which again ties back to that concept of pausing. If you can pause and be aware that something's a habit, you're more likely to change it. So in talking about this with kids, we hopefully give them another tool to be less influenced by it.
Wow. I tell you what, I need to run for another break, but before we do, I want to remind everybody, if you've got any questions for Dr. Burton, or you want to get his book or whatever, go to his website at developmentaldoctor.com. I want to go to the break, but while I was listening to you, Kirsten, and I was looking to you, Dr. Burton, all of a sudden the concept of just peer pressure came up, and when we come back, I just want to talk about that a little bit, because it seems to me that the way you were describing, I was feeling that there was a little bit of a peer pressure. And I just, anyway, think about that. We'll come back and address that after these.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise at Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Attention Talk Radio. Having a great conversation with Dr. Burton. Before the break, I was listening to you, Kirsten, talk about your situation and taking TVs out and your whole description about birthday stuff, and I just started kind of reflecting in my own world, and just the word peer pressure popped in, and it just seems that that's woven in here somewhere that's creating also issues. Dr. Burton, does media help increase peer pressure, or I haven't put it all together yet, but it just seems that is there's an element that here, and it's not healthy, or it's being exacerbated or something. Can you help me make sense of any of that?
Jeff, you can just expand on the question a little bit. Do you mean like peer pressure through social media, or do you mean like the peer pressure that comes out of marketing and wanting to, you know,
be
like everybody else you see on TV, that type of thing?
That's a good question. Back to you. Number one is, you know, more and more today is I've noticed I don't like texting at all. I hate it. It's really good. Like, I'm here, like, 2 seconds, but not to have conversations over yet. I found that I've been kind of peer pressured to deal with the screens, particularly with my kid among everything else. And I've noticed that my behavior among others is they won't pick up the phone, so I'm kind of pressured into doing that. That's one element of it. Then this other element that I was listening to, Kirsten, is the consumerism about trying to keep up with everybody and buy all the cool stuff that they might see out there. And so the reason I'm bringing it up the other thing, too, is I know my wife and I had a little bit of an issue because years ago my son was, 13, 14, and all his friends were playing in this game, and she brought it home, and I looked on it, and I go, it says M. He's harming the T. Why? And it was, to a certain extent, it was, yeah, but everybody else is playing this.
Right.
I'm like, first of all, he shouldn't be doing it, so he's getting peer pressure to get these games that he shouldn't be doing, plus the peer pressure to keep up for more screen time. So when I bring peer pressure into it, I know it's broad, but it just seems to me to be touching different areas here.
I think it's touching on I think you're right. I think many things that are already challenging for teens can be exacerbated in different ways by I'm just trying to organize myself for a second because you asked several different questions. I think certainly if you want to start with marketing, I think what we see in terms of marketing influences how kids, you know, picture their lives or what their lives should be. If I'm remembering right, I wish I could remember the details of the study. There was a study within the last year or so showing that unhappy children are even more, and children who are feeling unhappy are even influenced more by that sense of consumerism, that sense of like, you know, buying or having something will make them happy, which is, which obviously never or rarely turns out to be true. So I think there's that aspect of it for sure. I think there is a societal pressure to just sort of keep up with everything that's happening, and that's where I think it's a very hard line to draw. I think on the one hand, you know, things change. You don't want to be in the group of people who say rock and roll is evil because, you know, rock and roll isn't evil and the culture changes, and something like, if something like texting becomes a standard way of communicating, you know, you may be hamstringing yourself in some way if you decide not to join with it. But at the same time, you know, I think it's important not to get into an emperor's new clothes type of situation where we all just kind of go along with it because everyone else is saying it. I think, a lot of the change that's happening, a lot of the, the ways media is being sold to us and being used isn't necessarily what any of us individually or any of us as a whole might find best. So, you know, texting is a perfect example of, you know, and in truth, I'm not 100% sure where to put it, you know, where that fits into peer pressure and socialization versus something that's just becoming the norm. It certainly seems to me that we'd all benefit from from this skill and from sort of valuing that if you're actually talking to a person in front of you, you put your phone aside and you have a conversation, and unless you're actually waiting on something urgent, you know, you don't check your smartphone 11 times while you're talking to somebody else. At the same time, I think for teenagers, that may not be the social norm anymore. And, I don't know. I can't tell you whether that's good, bad, or neutral yet. I think it's just becoming a different way of life for them. So I think, you know, within this entire picture, I don't think it's a unique challenge to this generation. You know, there's this balance of things change, and we need to be, you know, aware that that's always going to be true and be open to that. But then trying to make more intentional choices around it. And again, what I think is unique to this particular change that's going on compared to some other things that have happened in our culture over time is that, you know, unlike just people, unlike the change itself being unnerving in some way, there is research. You know, it isn't just like, this is different, so it's, you know, so it's scary in some way. It's like, this is different, and there's actually a lot of studies saying we have to choose to use it differently.
This has been a very enlightening conversation, because the more we're talking about it, we talked about self-regulation at the beginning of the show, but there's so much here. It is so much about really being able to regulate yourself. I mean, this is kind of profound, but I said it as a part of this stuff, but it seems to me more and more as we have talked about it, it's not a good thing or a bad thing, but you can't go too far in one way, but at the same time you've got to live with it, which is the definition of self-regulation, to be able to pull back when you need to, but still participate, which to me just seems to be, it's got to be more challenging for those with ADHD. And are there any specific studies that compare media for ADHD and then a regular group of people?
I don't think those have been done yet, as far as I'm aware, and I'm very interested in this topic. I mean, I think we're still, as far as I know, we're still waiting for studies that specifically look at how people with ADHD manage media compared to those who don't. But one thing, I'm actually not 100% sure how much time we have left, and one thing I want to say sort of around that is, you know, as you're saying, I mean, ADHD is a disorder of self-regulation, and media is just a part of modern living, and I think, you know, one of the most important things any of us can do as parents nowadays is teach our children the life skill of how to manage this technology so that it's useful and maybe even educational, but not disruptive. So that, you know, by setting clear limits, by setting boundaries around it, by, you know, parents choose how much time is okay, parents choose what content is okay, you know, discussing marketing, it's not just a way of taking care of our children in that moment, especially when they have ADHD, it's a way of offering them a skill set so that, you know, as they grow, they're able to, you know, get the most out of it without having anything, you know, undermine any particular part of their life.
The one thing, as you described that, that just jumps out at me is, I learned so much from our interview with Dr. Barkley on executive function deficit disorder, but he talked about, you know, think of the brain as a two-level system. You have the automatic brain, and then you have the executive functioning brain. And the executive functioning brain is it's effortful. You have to kind of pause, and you have to override that automatic response. And he talked about those with ADD kind of having like a more limited fuel tank, so they have to go replenish that fuel so often. And as I'm hearing you talk about this and managing life, it's overriding that automatic behavior of pushing yourself away from the screen that is so important, which I'm beginning to understand a lot more why you talk so much, and your book has the mindfulness into it, is really using the awareness so that the executive functioning brain can actually override the automatic brain, especially for those with ADD.
That's true, but I would even take it one step farther, which is that, you know, a lot of creating behavioral habits is creating that automaticity.
Yep.
So you don't have to write anything at all. So that, you know, part of, I think, healthy living in general, and if you're interested, certainly part of the specific practice of mindfulness is, you know, the ability to pause and attend to what's going on in life and then make skillful choices that eventually become more habitual. Because once, you know, again, in terms of media specifically, once, you know, you or your children have learned more useful habits around it, then those are habits. You know, like you no longer need your executive function to override anything.
Very well put, because the habit becomes the automatic behavior, and if it's done in a healthy way, we're back to where we need to be.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we need to kind of wrap this stuff up. In closing, is there anything that we've missed or any other comments that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think I just did that a few minutes ago.
Right.
So, you know, I think really I don't know if I need to add to that at all. I mean, I think in the end, this is one of the biggest challenges parents have to raising healthy kids nowadays, and a lot of it is, a lot of it's just fine. But I think it's just important to always have that perspective of keeping track of, you know, what feels appropriate and what feels best in our house, and making skillful choices from there.
Absolutely, Kirsten. Any last comments before we wrap it up?
No, I appreciate Dr. Barton you bringing up the fact that it really is about, you know, managing the media, not necessarily having to cut it out altogether or I don't know what else, but that it's, you know, how do you let your kids access it and when and for how much time. So thank you very much for talking with us about this.
Well, thank you guys for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Dr. Burton. Again, for the out there, if you want to learn more about Dr. Burton, so there's a contact button or order his book, go to www.developmentaldoctor.com. And with that, thank you very much, Dr. Burton. Thanks again, Kirsten. We'll catch you guys next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.